On the evening of February 4th, 2026, the large community room of the Bozeman Public Library was filled to capacity with citizens who attended a listening session as part of NorthWestern Energy's public meetings about their 20-year Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP. It was the final of four public meetings held across Montana after those held in Great Falls, Missoula, and Helena. Under Montana law, regulated monopoly utilities, such as NorthWestern Energy, must prepare and submit to the Public Service Commission an integrated resource plan every 3 years. These plans are supposed to detail how utilities plan to supply reliable and affordable electricity to their customers over the next 20 years. The IRP is a modeling exercise to help plan an electricity generation mix that can keep the lights on during the most extreme weather days of the year. The information that NorthWestern uses to create its model, assumptions, inputs, constraints, and goals, have tremendous influence over the outputs the model generates. Mike Meese, Community Relations Manager at NorthWestern Energy's Bozeman office, moderated the meeting. John Schaefer, the manager of energy supply planning in Montana and South Dakota, gave a presentation explaining their Montana Integrated Resource Plan before more than 20 citizens added their public comments about the proposed plan. We hear now first from Mike Meese.
So I want to just thank everyone for coming out here tonight. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to us, let us share some of our ideas with you, and big part of this meeting is that we want to hear from you as well. My name is Mike Meese. I'm our community relations manager here in Bozeman. I've been with the company 22 years now. I'm a Highline kid. I grew up in Shelby, Montana, and came down here to MSU, got my electrical engineering degree. And when I was actually finishing up my last year of school is when I got on with the power company. And most of my background's been on the engineering operations side. And then for the last 6 years, I've been leading a group of IT professionals that focus on our operational technology, a lot of what our gas guys and our line workers utilize out in the field. And then decided to do something a little bit different, so I transitioned into this role at the end of last year, because I do like coming out, talking with the community, and you know, giving you guys information and receiving information back as well. To my left is Ms. Aubrey Tuss. She works with me here in Bozeman as well and the community relations side. And then our presenter, John Schaefer, on the right, and who will actually do most of the talking tonight. So hopefully you don't have to hear from me too much. And I'll introduce John a little bit more. But I guess just a couple of housekeeping items. First, I want to thank the Bozeman Library for allowing us to use this facility. It's an excellent gathering point for our community, and really appreciate them allowing us. One thing, you know, that the mission vision of the library is committed to providing a safe and respectful environment for all of its users. So I do ask tonight, please be respectful of everybody in the room, and then also of the other patrons that are utilizing the library services as well. So why are we here tonight? So we're been traveling around the state. Actually, I've only participated in this one. John's been the one that's been traveling around the state. So this will be the fourth community meeting on our Montana Integrated Resource Plan. So every 3 years, required by the Montana Public Service Commission, we have to go through a plan to kind of look at what available generation options for the next 20 years, start forecast what our customers' loads will, how that load will grow. You know, everybody, especially here in the Gallatin Valley, has seen a huge amount of growth. And actually, if you had been at the BBER, had the Economic Outlook Seminar this morning out at the Commons, and they had some some pretty amazing statistics on growth. Even though we're seeing a slight slowdown in this area, it's still growing. So the goal is to take that realistic 20-year outlook, estimating those energy needs, considering, you know, what we call our three-legged stool there. We want to make sure that we're providing reliable, sustainable, and affordable energy for our customers. We'll have a little presentation. So John, after I kind of get through my spiel, John, I'll turn it over to him. He'll have about 20, 25 minutes. He'll do a short presentation, and then we'll open it up for public comment. We are, Northwestern Energy, we are recording this to help with our notes. I know we have the Gallatin Valley Community Radio here as well that is recording and be looking at broadcasting it at a later time. And so she's been grateful to remind me is please refrain from using any of those forbidden words by the FCC. She'd really appreciate if we stay away from some of those forbidden words. And we've got Nonstop Local in the back as well recording here. So once we do get to public comment section, I'll reiterate this again, but it's a time to provide comments on, you know, specifically the IRP is what we're looking for here. This is a time for us to listen, so we're not going to engage in a debate or really be able to answer questions. Is that we want to spend this time right now hearing from you. We do ask that you be respectful of everybody's time, so we're looking at limiting comments to 3 minutes. Now, a little bit about John. So John is an electrical engineer and with an MBA. He grew up in Billings, a little bit larger town than Shelby was. But prior to joining Northwestern, he was involved in historic property redevelopment, served as executive director of the Northern Rocky Mountain RCND, a regional nonprofit, and he also founded and operated Powerhouse LLC, an energy efficiency and technology services company. And so then John joined us in 2013 as an automation and technology engineer. During his tenure, he advanced into leadership roles, including serving as manager of innovation, where he continued to work to develop and launch early stage and large scale initiatives across the company. His work includes early distribution SCADA deployment, community solar projects, you know, one of them right here in Bozeman and also in Missoula, microgrids, LED streetlight conversions, and the deployment of advanced metering infrastructure, AMI. So then in July of 2024, John transitioned into his current role as the manager of energy supply planning, leading a three-person team responsible for integrated resource planning in both Montana and South Dakota with a focus on reliability, affordability, and sustainability, as well as an oversight of qualifying facilities. Usually you'll hear them as QFs. Avoided cost calculations and all sorts RFPs for capacity. So with that, I'll turn it over to John. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thanks. This is my hometown. I've been here since 2003. Been doing a lot of work on homes too since in my powerhouse days in this community. But I just want to point out this is a draft. It's not finalized. We're still thinking about things. We're here to take those public comments. Those public comments are we're going to listen to them. We're going to try to summarize them because there's a lot. And then we're going to put them as an attachment to this IRP when it gets filed in April. So with that, there's a lot of different perspectives. How do we solve this problem? What problem are we solving? What, you know, all these different things, at least that are on my mind. How do we be affordable? How do we be reliable? What risks are we trying to manage? We got climate and clean energy. You know, there's also the trade-off local and regional solutions. You know, are we thinking about local generation? How are we thinking about transmission? You know, and all these are valid. So again, I'm going to listen tonight, but I do want to spend, you know, 20 minutes, hopefully less, just kind of clarifying, what are we here today? What are we trying to solve from at least my perspective? this IRP, I'm not trying to set electric rates. I'm not trying to lock in a single path. I'm not trying to select a single technology for construction. I'm not trying to do any specific projects. But it's a planning and modeling exercise. And, you know, we're looking at how do we meet this regional, and I'll talk about it, reliability standard. And how do we do that at the lowest cost given constraints? And so we run a whole bunch of different constraints or models, basically, and see how do we develop the lowest cost of capacity? How do we meet that? And again, this process, we've been working with the Electrical Technical Advisory Committee, who has people like PSC, DEQ. We have a kind of a stakeholder group, not shareholder, stakeholder group that's, you know, the environmental groups are part of that. We got some industry professionals. We have some large load people that are part of that. And so they've been part of this process over the past year to provide their input into the process. And then we have these public meetings across the state. So with that, reliability. So when I look at reliability, we use this Western Regional Adequacy Program called RAP. Kind of a cool saying, but it's a mouthful. But they're trying to solve a kind of a reliability puzzle. They do a big probability analysis, and they say, do we have enough generation in that yellow region to meet one shortfall in 10 years? And with that, they're looking at individual resources. And from this regional association, we get an accreditation. But basically, how are our resources performing during extreme events? Summer and winter are defined separately. And, you know, Montana, even though the last 2 years have been fairly mild, maybe winter hopefully still coming, but we're still solving for this wintertime need. I think you saw in the east, there was a pretty good cold front in January here just recently. So anyways, we're trying to keep the lights on during the stream. That's still my puzzle piece I'm trying to solve. It's a wintertime reliability. If I'm solving for a summertime reliability, say something that you'd see in Texas or California, this would probably look a lot different. And so where are we at today? You know, we're resource adequate. So there's that dashed line that you can see up there. That's kind of the peak load forecast, kind of out in the future. So it's sitting at a little over 1,250 megawatts and kind of continues. And this is our native load growth. We don't, our peaks grow. They vary over each year. But we also add this planning reserve margin that's also required by RAP. And this planning reserve margin is kind of the safety net, so to speak. And so to participate in RAP, we have to meet a planning reserve margin. And again, we're meeting that this year, and we're pretty much meeting that almost through 2030. And then, you know, and then we see the capacity contracts expire. So that's the dark gray up there. We have, I should explain the graph first, the capacity assets, then there's the renewable assets, and then there's firm fueled resources. And this is resources that you can kind of turn on somewhat like a light switch as an example. And so it's there when you need it. Those resources could be natural gas, could be coal, could be geothermal, it could be nuclear, but things with a fuel source through multi-day winter events. And the two things that made us resource adequate was the YCGS unit outside in Laurel, as well as additional shares in Colstrip. So the 222 megawatts in Colstrip. What are we solving for? We're really looking at every single new resource, solar, wind, hybrid, solar, and storage, and we're trying to figure out a revenue requirement, and that includes all the costs that goes into it, install costs, fixed O&M, taxes, financing, our return, all goes in the customer costs. And then we also have this customer benefit. So when we build a resource, there's a market, an energy market. If that resource gets dispatched to the market, it's done at a higher cost than the variable cost. There's a profit margin there. And that profit margin, that's a direct pass-through back to customers. It lowers customers' costs, utility bills. So we look at and forecast those going forward, and we kind of do the net. How much does that resource cost to customers? what's the savings to the customer. So you kind of have an overall customer cost on the top. And then on the bottom is, you know, how is that resource performing in extreme weather events? And that's the reliability. That's what we're looking at, RAP. And overall, we get this net cost per reliable unit of capacity. And so, you know, we're looking at all resources the same way. And the goal is, you know, how do we meet this winter reliability need in the most cost-effective way? And so, again, I mentioned we're not trying to select anything specific. We're here to test a whole bunch of different scenarios. And so we do have a base case where everything kind of operates towards book life. You know, how long do our resources last according to book life? If that happens, we still have to replace that. That's kind of what you saw in my resource adequacy chart. You kind of saw things kind of dipping down when our aging assets retire. We do a whole bunch of scenarios around Colstrip. What happens when it retires early? What is the most cost-effective resource for replacement? What happens if we didn't get that Avista share? What happens if we add Puget share to the portfolio? What happens with large loads, data centers? And with data centers, we're just looking at it from a reliability perspective and overall portfolio costs. We're not trying to come up with tariffs or anything like that, although that is a different process that's being worked on. But what does that look like? We look at emission scenarios. What if we didn't select any more fossil fuels in our portfolio? What's the most cost-effective way to meet reliability? What if we remove that constraint and allowed fossil fuels through the entire 20 years? And then we did look at the transmission. It's Northern Plains Connector. So that's a transmission segment that goes from Colstrip to North Dakota, and it connects us to two different energy markets up there, MISO and SPP. And so we looked at the energy value of that and in this scenario. And then we also looked at what happens if we increase, it's called demand side management, but our energy efficiency programs, and what happens on net metering if we increase that, what's the value of that? The IRP does not address the cost to the customers for those right now, but we're looking at the savings in this IRP. On the right, I have constraints here that I'm gonna spend a second to talk about. When we put this together, we do have this 2050 net zero goal. And there's this kind of a caveat because, you know, if technology is available, and I'll talk a little bit in a different slide about that. No additional fossil fuels after 2035, that's a constraint. So, thank you. We did remove that as a constraint too. We did look at energy storage, a whole bunch of different types, but for the grid charge storage, we put a limit on that. And the reason is there's only so many hours during the night to charge that energy storage. And you get to a point where during high peak times, you know, you're actually creating a new load on your system during the night. We did model hybrid solutions. So what happens, and we did not limit those, what happens if we can combine solar and storage and wind and storage? You know, is that a cost-effective way to meet reliability needs? So that was not a constraint, but we did constrain grid charge storage. We also constrained long-duration storage. Long-duration storage lasts 100 hours, right? Great resource for reliability, for tail events, but not necessarily the most efficient. Some of those storage are between 40 and 47% round trip efficiency. So it's not like they're a daily resource that you should be charging like a short duration lithium ion. And so we limited those to 150 megawatts in this scenario to manage through some tail risk events. And then this is a software, it's a modeling. We are looking at market. And so some of this is trying to build towards the market, like how much can I offset? And it would result in building resources a little too early before customers need them. And so we have to put a constraint to overbill penalty so that the model is selecting resources when we need them. And so that was the point of that. So we're not trying to build things early. So what did we learn? And again, no single resource meets reliability needs alone. Every scenario we ran selected energy storage, short duration first, and then it followed by long duration storage. Firm dispatchable resources, and you know, I've been looking at renewable energy, and I just want to say these multi-day winter events, from a cost-effective perspective, it's hard to do. I'll just put it that way. It's hard to do with variable energy resources. You need a lot to be able to get through these events. And so, you know, the model is selecting as cost-effective firm dispatchable resources as a cost-effective way to meet reliability. Transmission, again, that Northern Plains Connector study, it resulted in, you know, yes, low-cost energy access. You know, we're continuing to look at that. There's a new study. We're also looking at what's called M2I, Montana to Idaho connection. Still looking at that. I don't have any results in the IRP, but highlight that as an action item. Across, you know, some lower cost futures, you know, this is kind of the scale of, you know, the economy's a scale, I guess. When you're adding large load, you're selling more megawatt hours, right? If you're using that over existing infrastructure, it's lowering the cost per megawatt hour to pay for those resources. And so as you're building out portfolios, you know, you have more funding to fund infrastructure, so to speak. And so we looked at three different scenarios with adding large growth. You know, the point being is, you know, at some point, you know, you kind of trip and you have to build out your system, and it requires new generation transmission. Again, you know, I think, I'm trying to think of the right way to word it, but the cost causer, so to speak, should pay for things. And so as we look at, you know, tariffs moving forward, you know, I think all of that's being considered in taken into consideration. There's a great fact sheet that was presented, I think, January 27th on this that you can go read. It's not in our IRP. Again, our IRP is not looking at rates. It's just looking how do we meet resource adequacy. So just trade-offs. In general, lower-cost futures tend to use our resources longer. Kind of logical, right? They do result in higher emissions. The higher power prices reduce overall portfolio costs. And again, that was that kind of formula. If you have a resource adequate portfolio and you're selling that generation to the market, you are reducing overall portfolio costs to customers. Lower emission futures, they retire assets earlier. They also have higher portfolio costs. And so just high level, these are some of the trade-offs that, you know, we're thinking about, we're having to deal with. And I also want to say that wintertime capacity and meeting that, you know, there kind of needs to be a bridge to a new solution. And, you know, when we talk about Colstrip, you know, I know that's a big point of discussion, but that could be that bridge. I mean, we need something reliable to get us through these multi-day winter events. So questions, you know, like, these things, that bottom part of the equations was accreditations. I looked at this a lot. We rely on RAP. That tells how those resources perform during multi-day winter events. Does this favor gas or nuclear? The model is solving for the lowest cost of capacity. It's not trying to favor any resource. It's literally just trying to say, how do I do this most cost effectively? And how do I maintain reliability through multi-day events? 4-hour storage, you know, limiting it. Again, this is for grid charge storage, and I already discussed that, but it causes a new winter peak. Transmission, count as a reliability resource. Again, we're part of a regional resource adequacy program, and so we can't just go say, you know, that transmission provides us much reliability. We're going to go ask the regional program to go evaluate that. We have started that conversation with RAP to go evaluate the Northern Plains Connector and understand how much reliability that will provide our customers. You know, we got some concerns about high costs of candidate resources. And really, the candidate resources are up-to-date cost information, more localized to Montana, And I just want to say all resource costs have gone up or are higher. Why doesn't the IRP model future capacity contracts? I talked about capacity contracts, they expire. The Pacific Northwest is getting short on capacity. I'm not sure if they're going to be available. I'm not sure what they're going to cost until they come up. And so we really don't have an accurate way to model capacity contracts because it's a lot. It's all unknown at this point of what those will be like 4 or 5 years from now. So key findings, you know, to me, we're in a pretty good spot. We're resource adequate. We got to look long term. You know, how are we going to manage these scenarios? You know, across the models, earlier coal strip retirement increases customer costs. Northern Plains Connector provides energy benefits to customers. We're still looking at the capacity benefits. You know, the large customer growth can lower average energy costs. How are you utilizing those resources? But it does require new generation and transmission investments. There's a whole bunch of additional information in the IRP. There's an action plan. You know, there's actually a little graph to see how does the region perform with wind and solar, not just us. How broad is that during an event? There's accreditations, our missions, resource costs, just on and on. It's about 300 pages of technical information. I'm done with my presentation, but there's a website to go watch learn more about the IRP. You can watch a video. You can download the draft. There's a great executive summary. There's 300 pages of technical documents. You can access all the stakeholder and ETAC documents, the agendas and presentations. And now I'm going to turn this over, and we're going to do the public comment. If you don't have time tonight, there's an email address, irp@northwestern.com. And again, we're going to sit back and take our public comments and go from there.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, all. My name is Nick Fitzmaurice. I'm the Energy Transition Engineer with the Montana Environmental Information Center. I'm based here in Bozeman. Thanks for the opportunity to comment. I believe that this IRP portrays a future for Montana's energy system that conflicts with the desires of probably almost everyone in this room and most of Northwestern's customers, and it's not a least cost future. I think it's recognized around the world that the future of affordable energy lies in wind, solar, and storage resources. Yet, by limiting short and long duration storage and using cost estimates for wind, solar, and storage that dramatically exceed standard industry assumptions, the resources have been all but excluded from the IRP. What's more, the IRP fails to adequately reflect the reliability benefits of a balanced resource portfolio that combines wind and solar with both short and long duration storage. I'm not going to have time to cover everything tonight, but I do want to highlight the importance of transmission. This has been brought up, and we appreciate the IRP's discussion of potential reliability benefits from projects such as the North Plains Connector, not accounting for the specific capacity benefit of interregional transmission such as these, is a major hole in the model. This, combined with the model's inability to contemplate future resource and capacity contracts, and a seemingly black box planning reserve margin that it's hard to get any info on the inputs on, leads the IRP to project a capacity benefit that isn't reflected in reality. For example, if you hold all else equal, if 300 megawatts of capacity are enabled by the North Plains Connector, and Northwestern were to renew its expiring contract with the Judith Gap Wind Facility, the base case would be resource adequate without any additional resources through 2040. Factoring in load shaving and load shifting measures could reduce the projected peak even further, and there are countless other improvements that are needed in the IRP modeling. I also want to reiterate our concern that Northwestern's internal analysis for its impending day-ahead market decision, which will have extremely relevant implications for future system costs and reliability, should be included with the IRP. And I want to close just with a note on process, first acknowledging the improvements that I do believe have been made by the resource planning team. Unfortunately, upon arriving at a draft IRP, I think we're still left feeling that there's deep barriers within Northwestern's company culture that have impeded a truly transparent and collaborative process. From the beginning, it's often felt like pulling teeth to gain even superficial access to this process and the relevant materials that should be available as a given. So we would hope that moving forward, the company would produce a plan that's truly collaborative and a vision for Montana's energy future. Thank you.
My name is Isabel Friedman. I'm an environmental health advocate at the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is an international nonprofit and legal organization. And I'm here tonight both in my professional and personal capacity as a Bozeman resident to share a few thoughts on the IRP. I wanted to begin by giving some background that probably doesn't come as a shock to any of us in this room. Across the state this past year, Montanans were dealt record floods, extreme winds, billowing wildfires, triple-digit heat waves, and a pitiful snowpack. The state declared an emergency three times, and 12 counties were designated as primary natural disaster areas for drought. These aren't disparate news headlines. Rather, they paint this picture of the unprecedented times that we're living in. On its website, Northwestern Energy acknowledges that it has a role to play in our changing world and commits to achieving net zero emissions by 2050. However, this 2026 draft IRP mentions climate change only once, and it does not show, it not only doesn't show Northwestern on track to meet its climate goals, but actually shows it doubling its emissions should it bring online all the data centers it's committed to serving. I appreciate Montana's history as a coal and natural gas state, but I also care about our future as a state with clean air, fresh water, and healthy people. As the monopoly utility of the state, it is Northwestern's responsibility to invest in new energy sources responsibly and with our collective future in mind. I'd like to spend a few seconds talking about Northwestern's sizable investments in new energy sources, specifically for data centers. There is ample evidence showing that without careful management, data centers can have negative impacts to our grid, communities, and ecosystems. The large energy load demanded by data centers, which is pushing the expansion of coal and natural gas projects, will not only threaten energy prices and add unnecessary risks to our grid, but it will also increase air and water pollution and threaten the public health of our communities. At a high level, I urge Northwestern to shift its data center-driven fossil fuel expansion to cleaner sources and seriously consider the impacts to ratepayers and communities before agreeing to provide energy for these data centers. I have four specific recommendations. I'll go quickly. First, Northwestern should expand its existing forecasting to include higher load growth scenarios for data centers and broaden the impacts considered to include not only energy affordability, but also greenhouse gas emissions, water consumption, and air pollution. Second, Northwestern should conduct a social cost of greenhouse gas analysis to quantify the damage being done by the additional burning of fossil fuel and affirm the benefits of emissions reductions. Third, it's important that Northwestern breaks down their emissions by generation source. And fourth and finally, Northwestern needs to include climate resiliency and adaptation planning in its forecasting to ensure future grid reliability and optimize our investment choices. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for this opportunity. Good evening, my name's Bonnie Hickey. I'm a Bozeman ratepayer of Northwestern Energy and a past member of the Northwestern Energy ETAC, representing Bridger Bowl Ski Area. I want to speak directly to the assumptions behind the 2026 Integrated Resource Plan and why, from a customer perspective, it doesn't reflect good monopoly business practice. First, the modeling in the IRP consistently avoids wind, solar, storage, and demand-side solutions while favoring coal, gas, and even speculative nuclear resources. That outcome is not driven by market reality. Across the western U.S., wind and solar are the lowest cost new resources available. Storage is being deployed at scale by peer utilities. When your modeling inflates renewable costs by 20 to 40%, constrains storage arbitrarily and overstates peak capacity needs, it guarantees an expensive result, and customers pay the difference. Second, this IRP exposes customers to long-term financial risk. In the Western Interconnection, renewables are increasingly setting market prices. That means thermal plants will run less over time. When a monopoly utility builds long-lived fossil assets under these conditions, customers, not shareholders, are left paying for stranded infrastructure for decades. That risk is barely acknowledged in this plan. Third, the plan assumes growth from large loads like data centers without addressing whether Montana can actually support them. Data centers require massive amounts of electricity and water, more than the modeling includes. Montana has neither excess energy nor excess water, and any infrastructure built to serve these loads will largely be paid for by existing customers. In a monopoly system, scale does not automatically lower rates, it often raises them. Finally, I want to emphasize demand-side management. Businesses and households across Montana are working to control costs through efficiency and flexibility, yet this IRP does not address more extensive yet common DSM in terms of peak load shedding or load shifting. Ignoring the cheapest resources and low-hanging fruit available is not conservative planning. As a monopoly utility, Northwestern Energy has a special responsibility to pursue least cost, least risk solutions. This IRP, as written, prioritizes utility capital investment over customer protection. I urge you to reconsider these assumptions before they become long-term obligations for Montana ratepayers. I'll be submitting written commentary as well that goes into more detail. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, my name is Rachel Rockefeller. I live here in Bozeman, and I'm a registered nurse. My biggest concerns, you have not taken into account any of the public health costs of continuing all of the polluting sources of energy, and that is just totally written off as not being a consideration when it's the most important thing. If we don't have our health, we don't have anything. I'm very disappointed that Northwest Energy has taken on Puget Sound's portion of Colstrip and believe that the emissions from Colstrip have been out of line for a very, very long time. I'm disappointed also that you built that place in Laurel and we are paying the cost for that, which is another polluting source of energy. I could go on. I'm not representing anyone else. I'm just a regular person, but I am deeply disappointed in Northwest Energy.
My name is Jennifer Swearingen. I live in Bozeman. Two things really stood out to me as I read this plan. Number one was that key data pertaining to Colstrip are concealed throughout the entire document. Number two is that Northwestern's analysis severely undervalues wind and solar resources. Colstrip is our utility's cash cow, and so it has a strong incentive to keep running as long as possible. To that end, it refuses to show us the most basic information about Colstrip's operations, including how much it costs to produce a megawatt of energy, what it pays for the coal it burns, how often it's forced to shut down, and what its operational and maintenance costs are. On page after page, these key data about Colstrip are blacked out, so we never know just how expensive Colstrip power is. And Northwestern can claim that the facility has a near perfect 99.5% capacity factor. If only that were true. News media reported that during the peak winter demand of 2024, as well as the following peak summer demand, Colstrip could not deliver. Fortunately, power sharing agreements with other regions helped us avert a crisis. In my opinion, this resource plan is doing just what the last three plans did. It has heavily skewed the modeling to achieve its goal of building very profitable gas plants. It does this by massively underestimating the capacity of renewables and by hugely overestimating their cost. Northwestern even created its own proprietary formula to arrive at ridiculously low capacity factors for wind plus storage and solar plus storage, making them appear extremely inefficient and therefore very expensive. Their results are absolutely astonishing. For example, on page 115 and 116, the tables show that 10 megawatts of wind plus batteries is 5 times more expensive than a 100 megawatt gas plant. It even shows that 100 megawatts of wind plus batteries is more expensive than a 320 megawatt nuclear plant. On top of that, Northwestern is choosing not to renew its existing 20-year contract with Judith Gap Wind Facility. It's going to expire at the end of this year. That power has been the cheapest power in Northwestern's portfolio for the past 20 years. It's dumping wind so it can replace it with gas. I just feel like reasonable people understand that we need to choose a date certain to close Colstrip. That's what all the other utilities on the West Coast did. They made a date to exit, and we need to join those other states. Thank you.
My name is Will Swearingen, and I live in Bozeman, and just speaking as a private individual, I plan to focus my comments on data centers and their likely risks for our residential customers. It's clear that data centers are a major driver in this resource plan. That's because Northwestern has signed letters of intent with data centers that are going to require it to nearly double its electricity generation by 2030, only 4 years from now. The Northwestern claims that these data centers will have no impact on residential customer rates. In fact, if anything, they may lower our rates. However, this claim is shown to be suspect by a recent study by Harvard University's Environmental and Energy Law Program. The authors reviewed nearly 50 regulatory proceedings involving data centers and regulated utilities. The title of the study is Extracting Profits from the Public: How Utility Ratepayers Are Paying for Big Tech's Power. The study examines in detail the many sophisticated ways that utilities attract data centers with low rates and then hide cost shifts to residential customers. One of their main conclusions is the public faces significant risks that utilities will profit from new data centers by making major investments and then shifting costs to their captive ratepayers. The study also points to the other risks that data centers pose. These include the substantial risk of stranded assets. For example, if Northwestern Energy doubles its electricity production by 2030, and then the data centers substantially reduce their energy demand or even go out of business, residential customers could be left holding the bag, paying for highly underutilized production facilities. Other risk factors, these include technological advances in the AI field, which could greatly reduce electricity demands, think DeepSeek, or make data centers themselves obsolete, and also extreme debt-fueled spending that could result in an AI market collapse. Now, longtime Montana residents, many people in this room, will remember when Northwestern's predecessor, Montana Power, decided to go all in on the big new thing of the early 2000s, fiber optics. That resulted in a catastrophic bankruptcy and loss of $2.7 billion in assets, and we're still paying for that debacle. I fear that Northwestern Energy is setting us up for a similar experience.
Hi, my name is Ann Reddy, and I live here in Bozeman, and I'm speaking as a citizen, concerned citizen. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. I'll let others comment about how the burning of fossil fuels is destroying what we hold dear in Montana. Look out the window, mainly snow, and the water that it produces when it melts. I'll let others also point out the ways in which solar and wind power with battery backup is reliable and cheaper than coal and gas. But what I would like to talk about tonight is the number of premature deaths each year, the significant health costs, and the very concerning health impacts from the Colstrip plant, one of the highest emitting coal plants in the whole United States. I sometimes take a look at the obituary page in our Bozeman Chronicle, and one day my attention was caught by the face of a pretty young girl in the obituaries, and I was like, oh my, she's so young looking. And I read the obituary, and it said that she was 19 years old when she died, and she died from a fatal asthma attack. So it got me to thinking about how we as a society might have prevented her premature death. A quick Google search told me that Unit 4 at the Colstrip plant has been identified as the highest emitter of toxic air pollutants, including mercury, lead, and arsenic, in the whole nation. In fact, it is the only coal plant in the U.S. without modern pollution controls, causing it to be ranked I sum as the nation's worst polluter. So, what does that mean for those of us living in Montana? A recent analysis indicates that in 1 year, 31 people prematurely died as a result of fine particle pollution emitted from the Colstrip plant. Furthermore, the particle pollution from the plant is estimated to have caused $2.1 billion in health costs in the last decade. And annually, health impacts include 48 heart attacks, 530 asthma attacks, 22 hospitalized, and 19 cases of chronic bronchitis, all from the emissions. While methane power plants emit less pollutants than coal plants, they still contribute to significant local air pollution, causing health impacts and premature deaths. In closing, I would like to stress that the health and well-being of Montana residents need to be taken into consideration when planning the type of fuel that you use to generate power for your customers. Do you want to contribute to the premature death or hospital bills of our residents, or do you want to choose a power source that keeps them alive and healthier? Could you make a choice to save a beautiful young woman from an early death? Please put that into your equation. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Brady Wiseman. I live in Bozeman. I represented Bozeman in the legislature from 2005 to 2009. I was on the House Energy Committee and the Energy and Telecom Interim Committee, so I learned a lot about how all this works. And as a former elected official, I got to tell you, I'm appalled at the consistently devious and dishonest behavior of Northwestern's executives regarding what goes in the rate base and how it goes in the rate base. And you should not be the least bit shocked that very few people in this room trust you. Here's an example. Back in 2009, in a meeting in the basement of the state capitol, Mr. Bob Rowe, former CEO of Northwestern, told me these words, and I quote, "I'm not at all opposed to alternative energy as long as I own it." Meaning Northwestern's policy is to oppose all power projects owned by anyone not named Northwestern, especially customer-owned solar power. This is a travesty, and it needs to change tomorrow morning. Let's talk about data centers. I will state plainly that any new power generation acquired by Northwestern to serve data centers must not, I repeat, must not go into the rate base. Those data centers will be gone long before the generation capacity, and we ratepayers will be stuck with stranded assets paying for them for decades. We should fight this tooth and nail. Also, in regard to data centers, we need ironclad, brass-bound, steel-riveted assurance that when there is a brownout, that the data centers are the first to go offline, and that homes and real Montana businesses remain the priority customers for power. To reiterate, here's a few things that Northwestern needs to do. Expand net metering and open up the grid to more customer-owned solar power. Require data center investors to pay for their own power generation and absolutely avoid and forbid data center power generation going into the rate base. And prioritize homes and businesses ahead of data centers for power delivery during shortages. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michael Harney. I live here in Bozeman and longtime resident. I've watched the transition from Montana Power to Northwestern Energy. I'm not wholly impressed by the way that Northwestern has handled. I'm not wholly impressed by the way Northwestern Energy has handled the transition to being our monopoly utility. As an advocate for solar and a professional in the solar industry, nothing in the IRP addresses net metering, the future of net metering. Nothing in the IRP addresses capacity. Right now, net metering in Montana is limited to 50 kilowatts per user. The simplest and least cost impactful way of increasing generative capacity in Montana is to allow domestic solar to not have a cap at 50 kilowatts, let it go to 100, 200 like other states do, and allow small businesses to access that same benefit. There's no cost passed to the consumer from domestic solar. It's an individual investment in our energy future, and I just would like to encourage you to put more language related to domestic production in your IRP. Thank you.
Hi there, I'm Susan Bilo. I'm a Montana citizen living in Bozeman. Thank you for holding this event. Idaho, right next door. That's no blue tree hugging state, right? Idaho Power has been very proactive in integrating solar and wind and battery storage into their system. They realize it, the savings now, because they've already seen the significantly lower marginal operating cost. And if you take a look at their integrated resource plan, they continue to do so. Why? It helps lower costs for their customers, and they see the multiple values there. So I highly recommend maybe contacting them, maybe reading their IRP, contacting those folks, and you will hopefully, when the RFPs come on in, I hope that you'll take a really long, hard look at comparing what you see there for renewable energy systems compared to coal and natural gas, which is heavily preferred in your portfolio right now. Our future is in your hands. Thank you.
My name is Karen Kirk. I represent Montanans for Affordable Energy. Thanks for holding this forum. Colstrip is the most polluting power plant in the nation for airborne toxins. But your modeling shows that maintaining Colstrip through 2042 remains the lowest cost and lowest risk option. My question for you is lowest cost for who and lowest risk for who? Here's what your modeling leaves out. Over the past 10 years, pollution from the Colstrip plant has been estimated to have caused, this is a little repetitive, but it's worth it, 151 premature deaths, 188 emergency room visits, more than 90,000 cases of asthma symptoms. That adds up to $2.1 billion of healthcare costs in 10 years. How do those costs figure into your modeling? Amazingly, they don't. What number do you all think Northwestern uses for the value of a human life? Zero. What number do you think Northwestern uses for the value of human health? Zero. What's Northwestern's value for the damage they do to our beautiful state and our livelihoods? Also zero. And who's on the receiving end of this? Primarily, it's the Northern Cheyenne tribe. They've raised these problems with you repeatedly, and you have dismissed them. You claim that you've evaluated the environmental impacts of these different resources in the IRP, Section 7.1. Great, let's dive in and have a look. Amazingly, it doesn't even mention that wind and solar energy emit no air pollution. How can you possibly call that an evaluation when it leaves out one of the most important advantages of these resources? It does say that wind turbine blades are hard to dispose of. That's a nice shot. That's one of the fossil fuel industry's favorite memes, and it's amazing that you made room for that. But then you make no mention of coal ash. How's that going for disposal? No mention of greenhouse gases, leaking methane. You don't have room for those in your evaluation. So you didn't actually evaluate the environmental impacts. And not only is this like really awful from the human point of view, it's also kind of not allowed by our state laws. PSE rules say resource acquisitions will be evaluated with respect to long-term total costs, including scenarios based on societal costs. That's us, society. Montana law, the state encourages utilities to acquire resources in a manner that will help ensure a clean, healthful, safe, and economically productive environment. You're not including that. Colstrip is only low cost and low risk when our lives have zero value. I'll leave you with a very simple question. Why won't you value human lives? Why won't you value our lives? And to the people in the room, thank you so much for being here. To the media, thank you for holding these guys accountable. These are kind of rough times as we've noticed, but this is how we fight back. So thank you all.
Thank you guys for holding this forum. My name's Brian Kesse. I am a resident of Gallatin Valley. I'm a little bit concerned because it feels like your presentation that you had was a little lopsided. You spent a lot of time talking about maintaining reliability through multi-day events. You talked a lot about the costs and benefits of renewables versus fossil fuels, but it seemed like you overlooked the data centers that you guys are planning. It seems to me like the lack of focus on data centers seems manipulative. It's frustrating to hear a situation where there's so much emphasis on reliability and the structural integrity of the power grid, but you continue to give thought to building these data centers. I'm gonna go ahead and read what I wrote here now. I'm here to voice my concern about the data centers currently being proposed for Montana. I read through Jason Merkel's justifications for data centers on your website, and I'm concerned about the lack of attention to the costs that the data centers will put on everyday Montanans. Mr. Merkel does point out that under the large load tariff, high demand customers will pay their fair share of energy and infrastructure. However, the harm an AI data center will cost farmers, ranchers, hunters, skiers, fishermen, and so many more. These data centers use massive amounts of water. They pull that water directly from our local supply to cool their servers. State so prone to drought, with an economy so heavily reliant on water, should not overlook those costs. And why not address any of these costs on your website? Water powers our economy from tourism to agriculture. Thousands of Montanans need it to feed their families and literally feed the country. What happens if the state undergoes a widespread and serious drought? We turn off the faucets for farmers. Should wedding venues stop watering? These data centers cause significant challenges to the grid themselves or itself. I notice on your website one of the benefits of building a data center is job creation, and that also feels manipulative because data centers themselves have been known to put people out of jobs. So I'd like you guys to consider these thoughts. Thank you for having this forum.
Hi, my name is Fiona Grubin, and I'm a resident of Gallatin County. And I came here to say that data centers fueling the AI boom should play no part in this world's nor in Montana's future. It's absurdly and dangerously irresponsible for Northwestern Energy to have already signed 3 letters of intent to power new data centers in Montana. There are numerous and significant negative public health impacts of large data centers, including further degradation of the resources that make our state beautiful, our air, our land, and our water. According to the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, data centers caused about $6 billion in public health damages in 2023 solely from their impacts on air pollution. Surely the cost of renewable energy cannot outweigh the real human costs of continuing to burn fossil fuels. I'd like to ask you to please exclude data centers from Montana's energy future to account for the public health costs and impacts of how our energy is produced in future forecasting, and to take a genuine and authentic approach to building a sustainable and renewable energy future for our state.
My name is Mike. I came here from Lewistown in central Montana, and I'm part of Central Montana Resource Council. I'm going to continue the talk track of my esteemed citizens that came before me very briefly. I'm disappointed that this plan places so little accountability on the data center elephant in the room. The fact is, to me, I wouldn't be here, and I would argue that probably a lot of my fellow citizens here wouldn't be either, if data centers weren't required to bring their own power, and that if that power was required to be renewable, it would be in line with Northwestern's stated vision of zero carbon future. We then also wouldn't have so much pressure to buy more coal strip shares or hedge our energy future on small nuclear reactors, which, according to the plan itself, are pre-commercial and not expected to be operational until 2035. They're also one of the most expensive options per kilowatt hour that you considered in your plan. The plan also discounts renewables due to their low winter accredited capacity, yet it ignores the 10% reduction in 20-year portfolio costs proven by sensitivity R, which is also in your plan, the scenario which doubles conservation and net metering. Instead of pursuing these advantages, the plan treats DSM as load reduction rather than a primary resource. Given that, to me, this plan does not fulfill your mandate for a least cost, risk-informed path, and I would encourage you to reevaluate that plan. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Alan Crawford. I live in Bozeman. I'm speaking for myself, but I work in the global semiconductor and solar industry, the front end, and I have 3 things, very separate. One, I hope Northwestern, when you have these new future high-load customers, I hope you treat them better than you've treated one of your long-term high-load customers in Butte, where rates became so high they had to stop some operations a couple years ago that cost probably, I don't know, like 40 to 50 very high-paying jobs. Second is working on a project right now in North Africa that requires a very high-quality, non-disruptible electricity supply. And the fuel source on this is going to be greater than 90% wind, solar, and storage. So if that can be done in North Africa, I think it can be done here. And along those lines, listening to this presentation, I've sensed this extremely defeatist attitude of Northwestern when it comes to fuel sources for the grid, where you're saying wind and solar doesn't work, and I'm telling you it's going to work in another part of the world, and maybe that's not as cold of a climate as here, but have you even benchmarked grids in other cold climates, North America, even China, other parts of the world where it is working? And finally, I've worked in corporate America, corporations around the world for my career, and I have to say my confidence in the current favorite buzzword of the C-suite in Northwestern, so the manager, I'm not making a dig at the hardworking employees, but I have very low confidence in your company's ability to actually operate based on the simple fact that when you had this big outage in Colstrip a couple Januaries ago, that was a planned maintenance outage you scheduled in the dead of winter. And that's just absolutely ridiculous in running a big industry that is can be weather dependent. So thank you very much.
My name is Linda Young. I'm a resident of Bozeman. And I want to start by thanking all the audience members who've spoken. I've learned a lot. I got my doctorate in agricultural economics a long time ago, and I spent a career listening to modeling exercises. And if there's one thing that I know for sure, how a model is constructed, right, and the coefficients that are chosen, the assumptions, it matters a lot in dictating the outcome. That's beyond dispute. And I started out when I was reading the summary of the report and your conclusions, wondering how would this modeling and planning exercise change in terms of those model parameters and the construction of the models if you were actually acting and directed to act in the public interest rather than being accountable to shareholders. Right? I mean, the reason that there is so much suspicion in this room is that public interest is not what drives Northwestern Energy. You are inadequately regulated by the Public Service Commission. Now, Northwestern Energy became a monopoly in about 2002, right? And I point this when you acquired Montana Power Company, et cetera, and you had a monopoly over both transmission and distribution. And I point this out because it's not inevitable, right? I think it's time that we stop being confined within the box of this current reality and start realizing that what we need is a really major change in thinking so that we go to a different kind of a publicly driven monopoly power system. And I'm really speaking both to whoever's on TV and to the audience and saying what we have to do is not just offer up comments that we don't actually feel will be listened to, but advocate for something quite different. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Jen Milner. I'm a Bozeman resident. And to be honest, this energy engineering, a lot of this complexity is beyond me. So I'm just going to speak from the gut and say that if Northwestern Energy could use their own gaslighting as an energy source, our problems would be solved, okay? Let me just try to share four examples of the doublespeak coming from Northwestern Energy. Number one, let's start with this beautiful statement, we are committed to achieving net zero emissions by 2050, right? Great. Page 97 of this plan says the last year in which natural gas units can be constructed is 2035. And then it also says the expected life of natural gas plant is 32 years. If we had 32 years of life of a gas plant built in 2035, that brings us to 2067. Whoops, way over net zero 2050. So that's not very clear. Colstrip, a lot of people have brought up Colstrip. You say it's 100% reliable, except that it isn't, and we know that it isn't. couple people have already mentioned last year when it was either partially or fully offline during two of the biggest peaks in electricity demand, one during a winter storm and another during a heat wave. That outage in January 2024 cost $39 million in unplanned purchases to make up that deficit. So your model, assuming that Colstrip runs at 100% capacity, it just doesn't work. You need to plug in a value of 100% to make it look more valuable than it actually is. Which is what you did. Reality be damned, you just cooked the books until you got the results you wanted. Number three, we're somehow lacking the technology here in Montana to replace Colstrip or to move toward more cleaner energy. This is one of those FCC words I can't say. This is complete nonsense. Look around at every other utility in America. Coal generation has been falling since 2007, and wind, solar, and batteries are growing in leaps and bounds. How is it possible that other utilities are retiring their coal plants and building cleaner forms of energy, but this is somehow unattainable in Northwestern's model? Number four, you ignore climate change. You complain about extreme weather, yet you won't even mention climate change. Do you think that if you don't bring it up, we won't notice it? Have you looked outside? I mean, this plan, this IRP is built on pure fiction. Maybe it all sounds plausible within the safe space of your boardroom, but as you can tell by the turnout tonight, we're not buying it. And to paraphrase George Orwell, Northwestern Energy is telling us to reject the evidence of our eyes and our ears, and it's your final, most essential command, and we refuse to do it.
My name is Kristen Walzer. I live in Bozeman and have been a customer of Northwestern for 26 years. I appreciate you guys being here tonight and listening to us in all our beauty. I was looking at the Western Electricity Coordinating Council report that just came out, and they were talking about adequacy issues are going to be a real issue starting for this Northwest area, which is us, in 2028. And regarding meeting that demand through using natural gas, I've looked at some of the issues, and I'm wondering if they're addressed in your model. Some of them are that we're in a global market, and there's a lot of volatility in the cost of gas. And I don't know if you've included that risk in your model. It's found that Energy Innovation is a think tank, and they found that the primary causes of power bill increases are volatile fossil fuel gas prices and coal plants that cost more to run than replacement with renewables, extreme weather, and transmission costs. The EIA predicts a 91% increase in gas costs from 2024 to 26, with additional risk over the forecast period from new liquefied natural gas exports, which could continue to grow. And then, like, even the building costs. So building costs, construction costs for natural gas have increased 2.5 times since 3 years ago because turbines and other components are backlogged, like 1 to 7 years, delaying construction and adding to costs. So that's something that with the adequacy issue, getting new generation is part of the puzzle. And the fact is that solar and batteries can be built in like 12 to 18 months. So that could actually meet that demand in time. I think the other issue that you always look at is the peak and addressing peak demand. And honestly, here's a quote, short-term duration peaks are well suited to demand response. An event where customers voluntarily reduce or shift their consumption. And I think, I don't know if you're really looking at different ways of approaching this demand response or this adequacy need. There's some really, I don't know what other, thanks.
Ron Matlitch, just a citizen of Bozeman. John, to Northwestern Energy, I challenge you. I think everyone in this room should understand, and we can't ignore
that shareholders of the company deserve a reasonable rate of return, correct? That's part of your analysis. So with that, I put the challenge to you. You could be like a hero at Northwestern Energy by cracking the code on renewables and figure out how you guys can make some money from that. Because there are other states, I think of Texas, and there's solar, and to the east of us, North Dakota, and their wind, and Idaho has certainly abandoned coal. Somehow, in their modeling, they're seeing a way to make profits. So there's the challenge. The other thought that I had driving down here, and this may be far-fetched, but for some reason I started thinking about the class action lawsuits against the tobacco industry. And we're looking down maybe 20 years down the road when possibly things get really bad with climate change, going, you know, the tipping point. And if I were part of Northwestern Energy, I would be thinking very carefully about that risk that's out there. Thank you.
Matt Bozeman, Montana. I don't have too much to say because we know that Northwestern does not listen to the people very often, but your company is making a dirty, filthy, rotten cesspool of our beautiful state, and you're rolling around in it and you're loving it. We as a people are going to come together 2 weeks' time in this very room Wednesday, the 18th at 6:30. And you guys probably will not have much to say at that event, but we are going to talk about as a community how we're going to come together, form a coordinated, formulated response to your data center proposals and actions that we can take to mobilize and respond and stop those projects in their tracks because they are going to waste all of our water, drive away our wildlife, and make our energy bills unaffordable. That's about all I have to say.
Thanks for being here, and I hope you listen to what we say. Kim Potts, Three Forks, Montana. I'm here as a retired person on Social Security. The 40% rate increase that you guys got hurts us, but I'm here also as a grandmother. And I would be happy to pay the extra 40% if I saw it going into renewable energy so that my grandchildren could have a livable world. And it pains me so much to see you going down the road of fossil fuels on and on and on. How many of you went to the Winter Fair years ago? This week should be a high of 25 below. It's 60 degrees out there. This is insane. And instead of doing something right now, instead of doing something 20 years ago or 50 years ago when we should have started this, we're going on and on and on with the fossil fuels. And I feel like this is essentially taking my grandchildren by the hand and pushing them off a cliff. And I'm really disappointed that Northwestern Energy put money into acquiring more of Colstrip. This just breaks my heart and makes me sick.
My name is Joyce Serbeck. I'm from Bozeman. And I'm really impressed with all the research that people have done tonight. But the only research that I've done is with my electric bill. And I've had solar panels on my house for about 5 years. And every month on my bill, it tells me how much more kilowatts I've produced than I've used. And this January bill says, to date, your generated electricity exceeds the electricity used by 2,650 kilowatts. My idea is, if Northwestern Energy would create an innovative program where they would work with homeowners to install solar panels, they would be producing because I don't, my extra kilowatts just go onto the grid. I don't get paid for those extra kilowatts, so I kind of donate them. And so if Northwestern Energy would create an innovative program where you would work with homeowners to install solar panels, you would get the extra kilowatts, and it would solve, it seems to me, like a lot of the problem.
My name's Kent Casting. I'm just here as a private citizen. I'm a Gallatin County resident for the last 35 years. My comments will be brief. First, thanks to you guys, you have a tough job tonight. You really do. They say one picture is worth 1,000 words. And the picture I refer you to, and everybody in the room, is Northwestern Energy's building on Griffith. It demonstrates that Northwestern really doesn't put much emphasis on solar and wind or solar. It has about 6 solar panels out there, enough to fit on a garden shed. It has about 3 or 4 charging stations for vehicles. And it has a note on the door that says, customer service, effective September 3rd, 2025, customer service office is closed until further notice. One picture is worth 1,000 words. Thank you.
All right, is there any additional public comment? All right, well, seeing none, I think we'll wrap it up. And I appreciate everybody coming out tonight. And we did take notes, and we have recordings. And definitely I know that John and his team really appreciates it. Just as a reminder, the IRP at northwestern.com, where you can submit comments as well. Thank you, everyone, and appreciate you coming out.
You have just heard a recording of a public meeting from the evening of February 4th, 2026, held at the Bozeman Public Library, held by Northwestern Energy, about its 20-year Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP, before submitting it to the Montana Public Service Commission. It was the final of 4 held across the state. Under Montana law, regulated monopoly utilities such as Northwestern Energy must prepare and submit to the Public Service Commission an integrated resource plan every 3 years. You can add your comments via email at this address, irp@northwestern.com, until March 12, 2026. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LaClaire, for broadcast on KGVM and archiving at kgvm.org. KGVM depends entirely on the financial support of our listeners to continue bringing you quality programs of, by, and for our community. You can contribute by going to kgvm.org and clicking on the Gold Support KGVM button at the top of the page. We thank you for listening and for your support.